Well, first of all, I believe that the national security process is broken. We have dedicated people in every agency, but every agency across the spectrum that support issues related to national security, certainly well outside of the DOD and Department of State spectrum. And where I really began to see this need was, one, got a tremendous amount of feedback by people I served with in the military that I reconnected with when I came to Congress. And second, was what I saw on the ground in Iraq and Afghanistan, where you had great professionals from across the agency spectrum that, in effect, had to make it up as they went along because the protocols, the processes were not in place to address this, particularly from a personnel standpoint. And one of the great aspects of the Goldwater-Nichols defense reforms in 1986 was that it provided a framework for joint service of officers and non-commissioned officers between the services. That process, along with some of the structural reform, dramatically improved the combat power of our military. And in the same way, not unlike what happens in the private sector now, this allows people to be more networked, more informed about what each other does, and I think will help to facilitate cultural changes in the long run to help folks do what they want to do in the first place in service.
And the way I understand the workings of this, the administration would define these interagency communities of interest, and then employees would sort of move from agency to agency within that given community. Explain that concept and what might those communities look like?
Well, one of the things that we wanted to avoid doing was taking a very overly detailed prescriptive approach. We wanted to provide flexibility to the agencies a tremendous amount of feedback that I got were from men and women who served on provincial reconstruction teams, as an example. Different agencies had different personnel processes. Many times, certain agencies could not even provide personnel. I had a case of one of my West Point classmates who was an Army colonel serving to oversee agriculture issues in Afghanistan. And though this officer was highly motivated, he really didn't know anything about agriculture. And so what we wanted to do was, first of all, allow the executive branch and the agency community to define these interagency communities of interest. You know, and they could include, for example, cybersecurity and counterinsurgency. And then rotations would take place within that community across the agency spectrum. You know, for example, in counterinsurgency, if you take a whole of government approach, strengthening the local economy, local infrastructure, providing security are all important aspects of that. So you could conceivably see organizations like USAID, potentially the Agriculture Department, the National Institutes of Health, certainly the Department of Defense or Uniformed Services providing people to fulfill that mission. But in the same vein, oftentimes the very competent professionals in these agencies aren't really aware of what the folks in the other agencies do. And that's just hypothetical what I'm saying, but setting that up would allow then these people to get to know each other, to know the agencies. And I think it would provide a pathway not only for future reform, but more efficient working relationships. And we want the agencies to be able to define these communities of interest. The first two that are being defined in the first 5 years of enactment are going to be emergency management and then stabilization and reconstruction.
You mentioned a couple agencies, including USDA, who we don't normally think of as being in the sort of national security club. Is that one of the objectives here, is to broaden the horizons of who has a national security mission and integrate some of those non-traditional, for lack of a better term, agencies?
But I think one of the things that has happened by default over the last 30 years, certainly since I was on active duty in the military, the one thing I can say is the Department of Defense has become the default arm. I've heard members of Congress after Hurricane Katrina who were even saying that the Department of Defense should be given domestic emergency response responsibility. And I was shocked at that, but I understood the reason for that extra constitutional viewpoint was that the Department of Defense has an innate operational planning capability and culture. It has certainly the logistics and transportation infrastructure to project an expeditionary group of people to do a certain mission. And I think, though, some of the great strength that we have, if we look at a national security toolbox across the whole of government, are the civilian agencies that can do so many things in advance of ever having to put a uniformed service member on the ground. And it's not that there may not be a role for transportation or for security, depending on the circumstances, but I think some of the best solutions that we've seen can come out of that non-uniform area by allowing some of these great men and women to do what they do best. And certainly if there's a food issue, I think an agriculture professional would probably be better than a brigade combat team commander in terms of their experience and their training. And so having the ability, if in fact that's defined by the agencies as a national security role, would be appropriate. I think in the same vein, certainly in the Department of Treasury, there were numerous instances where in Iraq and Afghanistan still today, that some type of rudimentary banking system, had that been in the stabilization and reconstruction period in the immediate post-war time frame, would have avoided tremendous amounts of problems and, frankly, a very tremendous human cost due to this process inefficiencies as the coalition provisional authority was kind of making it up as it went along. And so providing that basis of rotation will allow not only people to get to know each other from a working standpoint, but I think also we'll see people building relationships that will bear fruit in a later time as they progress into the senior executive service or senior military ranks.
And a lot of folks have pointed out, as you did at the beginning of this interview, that the interagency process for national security issues is sort of an artifact of a bygone era and doesn't really work today. I think personnel's only one part of that process, though. Are there other areas in the interagency system that would be top priorities in your mind for an update or for an improvement if you get this done?
Absolutely. I mean, I would look at the National Security Council, for example. I believe that the Secretary of the Treasury or the Deputy Secretary of the Treasury needs to hold a seat on the National Security Council. So much is taking place through the world of finance right now, not only in terrorism tracking and other issues, but that function, I think, is extremely critical. The other thing that I would mention as well is in the realm of information standardization, the ability of people to develop systems to work among different agencies. We've done that to some degree in acting over the course of the last 9 months, some bills that would allow data standardization and process standardization between agencies dealing with welfare, unemployment, child welfare, and other entitlement programs on my subcommittee on Ways and Means. But as we look at a national security standpoint, some of those same needs for information sharing are there to enhance systems that work well today, but to make sure that the processes model what's actually being done on the ground. And in many of these agencies, we have legacy computer systems that date to the 1960s in a network 21st century world. And I think that in a world of Facebook and texting and Twitter, where entire countries are changing their government on that we can improve our ability to network and share information in a secure fashion. But really the place to begin is first with people, then with processes, and finally, after that, are looking at the specific tools and items that would be necessary to execute policy.
I think it's fair to say that every agency and government has its sort of unique culture. Is it a concern to you at all that somebody might come into an agency that they've grown up in a different agency, they're treated as an outsider, and they can't quite function as effectively as they normally would in their day-to-day job?
Well, I think that's a fair question on the surface. Having managed a lot of organizational change in the private sector before coming back into government, I've seen some of that. I certainly saw a little bit of that at the beginning of the Goldwater-Nichols reforms. But the one thing I can tell you is one retired Marine Corps general stated very clearly toward the end of his career, he was a young major at the time that the first joint service requirements were put into place. And to quote him, he said, "I discovered there are other great patriotic Americans in the other services of this country." And I think that what it will do is allow folks in these agencies to get to know each other, and those relationships will be a seed box, if you will, or a seed bed for great ideas for improving the way we work. If we look at the successes of our provincial reconstruction team, some of the other stability operations, the constant theme that comes back from the people across the agency spectrum to me personally has been, please allow us to work together more often, please provide us a platform for that, and please change the process for more jointness between the agencies, because it will reduce the cost and it will reduce the footprint in the long run.
And just kind of a legislative process question, I think this bill has not gotten any floor attention since you first rolled it out about a year ago. Does having it now included, at least on the House side, in the defense authorization bill much improve its chances for final passage?
I believe certainly it does. Chris Gibson from New York, who's a retired Army colonel who actually has a very broad background in interagency operations and addressing these reforms from a Defense Department standpoint, introduced the amendment for the National Defense Authorization to get this in there. Senator Lieberman and Senator Akaka have a potential amendment to issue within the Senate rules that would, in effect, provide the same amendment into the Senate defense authorization. We're hopeful that they'll do that and get this through. And I believe it's an important first step. Again, the Congress is not going to dictate to the agencies the specifics of how they work together, but what we're really doing is answering a plea from the operators in all of these agencies that are saying, allow us the flexibility to find a way to work together more efficiently to carry out our mission. And that, in fact, is the way we've structured this legislation.
One last thing. You've obviously got bipartisan support in Congress. Any feedback one way or the other from the administration?
I think the administration so far has been very favorable to the feedback that we've gotten from State Department, the U.S. Agency for International Development, certainly across the board from folks in the Defense Department has been very positive, and even meeting with a group of colonels from the U.S. Army War College who were graduating and represented all of our services, all said that some type of interagency personnel rotation would be tremendously helpful across the full spectrum of operations. And so I think the consensus at the operating level was very positive. We've certainly had support from the administration as these processes move forward. And Congress oftentimes is the lagging indicator on bringing about needed reforms, and we're very hopeful to see this get passed and enacted into law.